Coming up on Tech News Today, a new $99 game console. Verizon wants to edit the internet for you, and Rim shakes things up, sells their jet. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, July 10th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, featuring the My Ford mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more at Ford Electric Vehicle Technologies at Ford.com/technology. And by Gazelle, the easy way to sell your iPhone, iPad, iPod, or Android smartphones from your home or office so you can get the latest versions. Get a risk-free quote that's good for 30 days at Gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachler.
And I'm Jason Howell.
We're keeping you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, putting them in context for you. And we start, as always, with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Steve Ballmer talks a lot, and the Microsoft Worldwide Partners Conference yesterday was no exception in what I've just decided to call the Ballmer Effect. Quotes from him are zinging their way across the internet. Most of the attention is given by SEO-minded bloggers to the quote with the word Apple in it. Ballmer told CRN, quote, "We are not going to leave any space uncovered to Apple. Not the consumer cloud, not hardware, software innovation. We are not leaving any of that to Apple by itself. Not going to happen, not on our watch. Developers..." You get it.
Two of those people, you know, those people familiar with the matter, say that RIM, which has lost 95% of its value in 4 short years, is selling one of its 2 business jets under a plan to save $1 billion in operating costs. The 9-passenger Dassault Aviation SA-F50EX is up for sale, and RIM is trying to fetch $6 to $7 million, which just leaves $993 million to cut. Shouldn't be too hard.
Just get more jets and sell them. More and more developers prefer to write mobile games that they sell for 99 cents in hopes of getting rich off the next Angry Birds. Yet gamers still prefer to play games on their TV screens. Ouya thinks it can make both camps happy. Ouya makes a $99 game console that will be about the size of a Rubik's Cube and runs a customized version of Android to deliver HD gaming to the TV. The company began a Kickstarter campaign today.
Developers. Wall Street Journal reports Google may settle with the FTC to pay a $22.5 million fine for bypassing privacy settings on Apple's Safari web browser. Google claims the code that bypassed privacy settings to set a cookie was implemented unintentionally. The fine would be the largest penalty ever leveraged against a single company by the FTC.
If you visit the Russian arm of Wikipedia, you'll see a black line across the site's logo and no actual site for 24 hours. Why? To protest a law that would give the Russian government authority to blacklist sites that relate to child pornography, teen suicide, and drug use. Opponents say the law is too broad and it's going to give the government too much power over what to censor.
How do you like your mountain lions? Golden, perhaps? Apple released the Golden Master Edition of its next operating system, Mountain Lion. The download is available to developers only. More developers. Apple announced last month that 10.8 would be available this month, but did not give a date. With the Golden Master release, it could just be a matter of weeks.
I like my mountain lion slightly rare. Which is because it's you can't get it. Never mind. Excited about the Netflix of magazines? Next issue has been available to Android users for a few months now, but it's finally coming to iOS. For $10 to $15 a month, you get access to up to 39 magazines, tabloids, and weeklies like The New Yorker, Sports Illustrated, and more. The company hopes to double the number of titles available by the end of the year. Another wrinkle, publishers get to choose what platform their magazines appear on, so iOS and Android users won't see the same selection and continue to have fanboy fights.
You wanted it, and they listened. Dropbox is now offering double storage for its pro plan. So for $10 a month, you get 100 gigabytes, up from 50. For $20, you get 200 gigabytes. And if you want half of a terabyte, that will cost you $50 per month. Begun, these cloud wars have.
I got to do some preemptive trolling. I'm going to send you an email. SkyDrive did this a while ago. I had 25 gigabytes for free every month.
I didn't say anything like this is what all the companies did. I spoke specifically about Dropbox.
Pre-trolled for your convenience. Kim.com is saved. The New Zealand court hearing the U.S. extradition request for .com has moved the trial until after the Mayan calendar runs out, which means the world will end first, maybe. Or it may mean that .com's extradition hearing will happen in March 2013. Legal complications, including the invalidation of the warrant for seizure of .com's property, caused the delay. Matthias Ortmann, Finn Batato, and Bram Vanderkolk, all of whom face allegations of copyright infringement, had their hearings delayed as well.
There's some good news and bad news, AMD investors. The good news is AMD thinks you look great. Are you working out? The bad news is that AMD expects revenue to be off by 11% for the quarter ending on June 30th. The company cites softer than expected channel sales in China and Europe and weaker consumer demand impacting AMD's OEM business.
You don't want to sleep on those channel sales. It hurts your back. Way too soft.
Yeah.
I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, Ford. This episode brought to you by Ford, featuring the My Ford mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. Now, why, you ask, do I need a smartphone app for my electric vehicle? Let me tell you. It can take advantage of value charging features powered by Microsoft based on your local utility's participation, so you know when the best time to plug in and charge is, saving you money on peak or reduced rates from the utility without a big complicated setup process. It just takes care of it for you. Use go times to precondition your vehicle's temperature so it's toasty or cool, whatever you want, before your departure. That conserves battery energy because you don't waste a lot of time cooling or heating your car. You're probably going to cool it this time of year, but in the winter, you might need the heating. Monitor charging, get alerts, find charging stations, plan out your drive so you know exactly where you can charge that car up, you know, whether the airport has some places or the parking garage you park on has some places. Share and learn smart driving tips with others. There's even a gaming aspect. You can try to be the leader in the most efficient driving. Monitor how far you drive, how much CO2 you save by not using gas. The My Ford mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. 2012 Ford Focus Electric is available for purchase right now. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies by going to this address, ford.com/technology. And we thank Ford for their support of Tech News Today. Let's dig a little deeper into some of the stories of the day, and joining us to do that at 3 in the morning for him, Mr. Peter Wells, editor of Australia's largest online Apple community. Peter, thanks for staying up really late for us.
No problem at all. Good morning, America.
What? It's 3 in the morning Wednesday for you, right?
Indeed it is, yes. It's nice and, well, it's not sunny yet, but yes, 3 in the morning.
It's not sunny somewhere.
There hasn't been much Wednesday for you to tell us about yet.
Not yet. I'll get back to you.
Well, let's start by talking about comments from a CEO who needs no introduction, but we'll give him one anyway.
Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Ballmer!
So, Ayaz, you've been paying attention to some of the things Mr. Ballmer has been saying at the Worldwide Partners Conference.
Yeah. Not only that, but he actually gave a long interview with CRN. And you know what? I'll just read some of the quotes, and I'd love to just hear what everybody thinks about them. And we already heard about the Apple quote. We're trying to make sure, to make absolutely clear, we are not going to leave any space uncovered to Apple. He continued by saying, but we are not going to let any piece of this go uncontested to Apple. Not the consumer cloud, not hardware, software innovation. We're not leaving that to Apple by itself. Not going to happen. Not on our watch. I didn't know Microsoft had a watch when it came to this.
Oh, please. Really, you're going with the watch pun?
No. I meant as in like the
The watchers.
They actually did have the spot watch.
They took the black. Is that what you're saying?
We'll do the spot watch. Right.
But, this is the sort of thing, it sounds almost like what a politician would say, and you're like,
you
okay, all right, let's just... So show me the money.
Peter, does this sound like Microsoft's acting like the underdog to Apple? Because that's the way I read it. It's like, you're not the underdog. You have 90% of the market.
I guess they are, though, in this mobile device space. I mean, I don't know. I love when Ballmer opens his mouth. It's just so fascinating. I don't know whether I'd want him as a boss, per se. But if he had a talk show, I'd watch it, for sure.
On the Microsoft smartphone, theoretically, if they would make one, the CRN asked Ballmer, would you make a phone? He says, he had a pause and he said, quote, right now we are working real hard on the Surface. That's the focus. That's our core. Look, we'll see what happens. We have good partners with Nokia, HTC in the phone space. So, again, when Microsoft introduced the Surface.
And in case people are confused, we know that they make Windows Phone operating system, but it's about making the hardware. Particularly.
When Ballmer introduced the Surface tablet, he did say, we love our partners, and then said, hey, we have our own piece of hardware. Would Microsoft get into the hardware business, back into phones? It just seems like it's a little nuts for them to do that after the Kin debacle. But they're making tablets.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to make another Kin. Let's hope. This doesn't sound, though, like... It sounds to me like someone says, you guys working on a phone? And he's like, listen, we're working on the Surface right now, and I don't want to say no, because what if we're going to change our mind in 6 months?
We've made one before.
Yeah, so it doesn't sound like there's some sort of, I don't know.
It's a lot more complex to get into the phone-making business because of dealing with carriers.
Sure.
If you notice with Microsoft Surface, there's no data plan included. This is a Wi-Fi-only device. That simplifies things. And I think you maybe, you know, I don't want to overparse this, but you may be seeing that attitude of saying, well, let's see how this Microsoft Surface thing works. And here we are at the Worldwide Partners Conference with the partners that were all wondering if they're really upset at Microsoft for getting into a direct competitive hardware-making space with them. What's the feeling there?
It looks like Steve Ballmer's doing damage control about the Surface. He says, quote, if a partner says, hey, look, I want to sell these things, he's talking about the Surface, I want to put them in solutions, they can order some off Microsoft.com and sell them. There is nothing that gets in the way of that. And this is, I think, the really important part here. But we have not set up what I would call industrial distribution as sort of a first element. So theoretically, it would be, okay, you can use our products, you can remarket them all you want, but we don't plan on selling them aggressively, so we're not really in competition with you partners. Peter, do you think this is going to make everybody happy that are sitting there, like the HPs and the Dells of the world, who are like, you're making your own hardware, and we do that too?
Yeah, it must be a really tough time for those guys out there. I mean, I don't know. Sorry, if I can just go back to the phones thing for a second. I really don't want Windows to or Microsoft to make their own phone, just because I've got such a soft spot for Nokia. I really want those guys to do well. So, yeah, I really hope that they kind of leave Nokia to be their chosen partner. But, yeah, I don't know. I can imagine there'd be quite a few nervous conversations at that conference this week.
Yeah, and I think more importantly is what he said about the amount they'll sell. He said we may sell a few million of the Microsoft.
Didn't
service,
he right? also just say we're not going to let any piece of this go uncontested to Apple?
Yeah.
But we're not going to sell that aggressively.
We're not going to sell our product that aggressively. I mean, we imagine our partners will. It is trying to play all sides of the issue,
yeah.
right? Which is like we're going straight ahead of them, but not ourselves. We'll let the partners go and take care of that because they'll make plenty of money. But the Surface is there. It's a weird line to walk. And I feel like it's an important thing for Microsoft to make this sort of reference design to let the public know what Microsoft's Windows 8 RT and Windows 8 tablet-oriented operating systems look and work like. But isn't that an... I think the thing that they're having a hard time covering is, isn't that an admission of the failure of the partners to do so?
Not necessarily. I mean, the part of the numbers of the sell a few million, Microsoft already projected that over 375 million Windows machines would be sold in the next 12 months. So if Microsoft's only taken a small...
Windows machines or Windows tablets?
Windows machines.
Yeah, see.
So it's pretty yeah. vague out there. But that would mean to their partners, though, hey, look, yeah, we get that you can do this, and we do have this design that you could copy. Feel free to do this. But we want to show you guys what a device should be. I mean, again, they have to control the message, because if Windows 8 falls on its face, I mean, that's what they're banking everything on. That tile interface is on everything. And if they don't have a standout product, they're gonna be really messed up for the rest of the, well, a couple of years now.
Well, and it is kind of like Star Trek. Like, every other Windows release tends to fall a little flat. Windows Me, Windows Vista, Windows 8 is the next in the pattern. Can they break the trend here? And a lot of people feel that the tile interface, at least on the desktop, is going to cause problems for them. But I believe that tile interface will be very successful on the tablet space. And I think they will sell a lot of these. So I'm a little puzzled by them getting into direct competition by making the hardware. I would think that they would want to come up with the Surface and sell it through their partners rather than selling it directly. But again, that leaves the public out of it. And I think this is really an education of the public with the Microsoft Surface effort. Let's talk about a company that's in much more dire straits than Microsoft, RIM. Having some more statements in the public and a shareholders meeting today.
Yeah, so Thorsten Hines made an appearance as CEO at RIM's annual meeting in Ottawa. A few interesting things came out of that. Both Hines and founder Mike Lazaridis are now part of the board.
Oh, Lazaridis is back.
Well, what's weird is, am I insane?
Don't
but
call
wasn't
it a comeback.
Part of the board when he was co-CEO?
Then he stepped down.
And then he stepped down, so he's back on the board. So that wasn't very long.
Well, I mean, he was on the innovation...
Missed it.
The innovation committee he was heading. He must have done a great job. And they're like, come back.
Well, there's a lot of innovation going on in RIM right now. Yeah, he deserves a spot. So they're both on the board. Lazaridis is back. One attendee did note, not by overwhelming approval. 14.8% did not withheld votes, rather, for Hines, 19.1 for Lazaridis. But they're back. But there is also talk among both legal experts and analysts that RIM is possibly setting itself up for a shareholder class action lawsuit, basically based on those within RIM, not just Hines, but others who have spoken publicly about BlackBerry 10, new hardware coming down the pipe, that they withheld information that they knew about delays, stuff that shareholders should know and stuff that they have to legally disclose. For example, you can think back to May 1st, conference for app developers. Hines unveiled the BlackBerry 10 prototype, showed some stuff off, very gung-ho about it, said, you know, we're laser-focused about the future, things are going to happen end of this year. Now things are delayed again, and it's like, how much do they know? Are they just hoping for the best, or are they deliberately withholding information from people who need to know this? Jean-Louis Gasset, who's former president of Apple Products Division, actually, and he's a founder of Software Maker B, venture capitalist blogger, says they're going to get sued. And they're going to get sued because if you take a closer look at the record, it's likely to unearth knowing and willful misrepresentation. When the CEO says that there's nothing wrong with the company as it is, it's not cautious and doesn't make sense.
But he also said he's not happy with the situation at RIM. So
that's correct.
It's sort of taking his wrong with the company out of context.
He did just say this, but that is a bit of a new statement based on what those within RIM have been saying for the last couple of years. I mean, we've been talking about, is RIM delusional for a couple of years now? And it only gets worse. We talked a little bit earlier in the show about the idea that RIM is trying to save themselves $1 billion. Getting rid of one of their two jets is just a first step in that direction. But E27, which is a blog that covers the Asian tech scene, is reporting that RIM is also investing $100 million to grow their developer community for the BlackBerry platform, something that they probably need to do. But at this point, that's certainly not putting them in the cash positive direction.
I feel like RIM is, the more I think about it, the more I think RIM is going in the wrong direction by trying to compete with Apple and Android. Which seems to be what they're doing with BlackBerry OS 10. It seems to be what some of these confusing statements are trying to position themselves as, is, boy, coming after the first of the year when you see our new stuff, you're not going to want to buy any of the other phone. I think that's the wrong way to go, because we're starting to see reports of enterprise folks looking at alternate secure solutions. They're looking at secure Android implementations. They're trying to figure out how to lock down iOS. The reason they've stayed with RIM is because of security. RIM should double down on that. Mm-hmm. And maybe that means a smaller market for now, but a smaller market that's solid is much better than a continuously declining market. And I believe what RIM should do is say, we are the most secure solution. We mean business. We're the professionals phone. Because that's what people have thought of BlackBerries for quite a long time. Emphasize your strengths, and I think you can save RIM. Try to compete on the same playing field as Android and iOS, and I think they're going to lose, and I think that's what we're seeing.
And I think you're absolutely right, and their strengths is new stuff, and that new stuff just keeps getting pushed back. Whether or not they know what's going on behind the scenes and they're not being completely honest with their shareholders is just a side effect of the real problem, and that's that RIM has nothing new to sell people.
I mean, I could see why they have to keep going after the consumer market, because in the bring your own device in a world, you can't just sell directly to IT professionals. I know they have the government sector, and I know I've seen some stories talking about the alternatives to RIM, because some IT professionals are afraid RIM will cease to exist. Not necessarily that their hardware is not going to be any good, it's that there will be no
company.
They'll
disappear.
That's
a
huge, I mean, that's now becoming a real concern. And on the lawsuit front, it seems like, you know, RIM has made some public statements, and it does look a little misleading, but I don't know if Thorsten Hines is trying to do more damage control by saying, okay, I said this in public, now I said that in public, so now you have no idea what I think. I like it. I hate it. Well, that's great. That means you're inconsistent in the press, but the thing is, the shareholders want to get some value out of RIM at this point, because that stock price is tanking constantly. It's just it's a kind of a sad state of affairs for its market capitalization. I mean, it could be bought by anybody at any given time, it seems like. And if they don't pursue things to increase shareholder value, that is grounds for, you know, a derivative lawsuit. So if that's the way people are going to get money out of RIM, I don't know if that's going to help the company at all. It just looks like it's going to become a target for some other company.
Last word to you, Peter, before we move off this story. Is there any different perception of RIM in Australia?
Not at all, no. I mean, RIM actually just did a weird campaign a couple of months ago where they drove these buses outside the Apple Store, and it was like a fake protest where people would scream, "Wake up!" to people in the Apple Store. And they turned it into this weird kind of like teaser marketing campaign. And it was so strange that everyone just assumed it was Samsung because it, you know, it sounded like Samsung's message. And Samsung actually had a product to ship, which is always kind of key when you do a marketing strategy to have like a product at the end of that. And so, yeah, I mean, you know how I said I have like a soft spot in my heart for Nokia? I really don't for RIM. I mean, I just can't see much of a future for them.
All right, let's move on to talk about that $99 game console, Ouya, that's being developed by Julie Ehrman and folks. She's the founder of Ouya. She's been in the gaming industry for quite a long time. $99 box, Android 4.0 based, although it's modified, launched on Kickstarter today, designed by Eve Bihar, so it's pretty. It's a nice-looking box, and the gamepad itself is also designed by Bihar. Specs look like they're going to have quad-core NVIDIA Tegra 3, gigabyte of RAM, 8 gigabytes of storage, standard wireless controller controls, but with a 2 to 3 inch touchpad in the middle. And the reason for that is if you move Angry Birds and Temple Run to your game console, you might need a touchscreen to play some of these games. Now, everything you download for this console will come through the Ouya store, but they say it should be very easy to take an Android game that you've written as a developer and have it run on Ouya because it's just using Android 4.0. Also very hackable. They're allowing you to open the case with a standard screwdriver. They have documented test points for soldering if you want to add things to the motherboard. The OS comes rootable. You can expect a Linux distro for this thing right out of the gate, I'm guessing. But that's all very friendly to geeks, and it's all very friendly to developers. Are people going to plunk down $99 for what is an underpowered game console, but affordable?
Well, I think if you look at the Kickstarter page, which I just refreshed to get the latest numbers, I mean, with 29 days to go, they have 3,223 backers. If I refresh the page, it'll probably be a lot more. They're almost halfway the way to their $950,000 goal.
$358,000 of their... Wow.
Well, yeah. It's 409,000
now. I'm refreshing now.
Yeah.
Oh, and there we go.
Timpani.
Man.
So, I mean, I think the interest is 100% there. That's the neat thing about these Kickstarter projects is even though it starts as a very grassroots effort, stuff like this is people are talking about on Twitter. Look how many people are backing this project because it's so awesome that as long as they can, I guess, appeal to the mainstream gamers who maybe aren't trolling Kickstarter as much, they've got it in the bag.
I was thinking about the hardware. I mean, the hardware is really interesting to me. Anything that's hackable, it's $100. I mean, it's got some real power in there. I really like that. But the thing is it going to have the games? And it's supposed to be very developer-friendly, and anyone's supposed to be able to...
Notch is on board. Minecraft's already in.
Well, I mean, Nintendo's got some really great first-party games, and that's what they're doing. But the thing is, if you don't have enough developers out there making games for your console, that runs into an issue. I mean, the hackable points are cool for nerds like me. But if you don't have enough games, and this is what your device is supposed to be doing, that could be a problem. But the thing is, what Ouya has done in their Kickstarter campaign, they've explained this, is that they're letting developers choose how to make their money. They can charge for the games. They can do in-app purchases. They can do all kinds of different models that allows them to get their money, which is...
Every game has to have a free component, too.
That's right. Every game, you can try it for free, which is another great idea that, oh, look, I can try this out. Less piracy, theoretically. You're not worried about that. You're like, oh, great. Try the game. If you don't like it, don't buy it. If you buy it, that's great. But again, they have to be very aggressive to make sure that they can get the developers. And what in the same video, they talked about how closed it is and how hard it is to set up be a developer for the Xbox or the PlayStation or Nintendo. And because of that, if they can get some of those independent developers to make games for this console, of course it's based on Android, it's a good in. It's just I'm wondering about the longevity of a device.
It's not just hard to develop for the current console market. It's expensive. Mm-hmm. And that's why the indie developers will probably flock to this because they're already moving to mobile platforms. And this says, hey, instead of just making a game for the mobile platform, I'm going to make a game for this as well. I don't know whether the biggies are going to be willing to do that as well. They may experiment with it, though, and that may be enough. Peter, what do you think of this?
I'm kind of with Ayaz. I mean, I like the idea that it's $100 and it's hackable. Like that for me is already across the line. Because then you've got this kind of almost like an Android Apple TV. It's this little box that you can put beside your TV, and who knows what nerds can come up with. So yeah, I really just want to grab this for that reason alone.
I think it will definitely get funded. I mean, that's pretty obvious. And we will see this thing. Whether we see, I think you nailed it though, Ayaz. And I'm not saying it won't happen, but the question is whether we see some big developers make games specifically for this platform or get popular titles. Minecraft on board is already a huge start. It's not a big developer, but it's a very popular title.
This is what the Nexus Q should have been. like $99. It runs Android. You can do anything you want. Get applications on it. I know it's been hacked.
Good point, because you could add Netflix to this from Android, theoretically. And Twitch TV is already on board. So you can actually watch video games. If you're a gamer who likes watching Twitch.tv, watching StarCraft tournaments, that's going to be available on this thing as
well. Give me another non-standard component. It's the size of a Rubik's Cube. It's tiny, and you can sit next to your queue and your boxy box, and they can all sit on that shelf together.
Well, and it's Yves Bihar, so it looks nice.
He made the jam box, I think, for Jawbones. Yeah. It's very nice.
All right, this episode of Tech News Today also brought to you by Gazelle. You want to get some money so you can back some of these crazy Kickstarter things out there? Sell your old gadgets. Get rid of that iPhone, that iPad, that iPod, that Mac, that smartphone that's sitting around that you don't use anymore, and sell it on Gazelle. Go to gazelle.com, put in the device that you're selling. Tell them what cables you have, what condition it's in. Lock in that risk-free quote for 30 days. Do it today, because gadgets lose value over time. They don't get more valuable. And then once you've decided, yeah, I want that money, you send it to Gazelle. It's Gazelle.com. They pay for the shipping. You print out the label. You drop it off at the place that you're shipping it with. And then you'll get paid. As soon as they get it, you get paid by check if you want, or PayPal, which is even faster, or Amazon gift card, which gives you a 5% bonus on the amount they offer. It's a great way to get cash to pay for the latest devices. Now, quotes vary by model, so make sure you put in the right model number and all that stuff. They'll fix it for you if you don't, but you want to make sure that you know how much you're getting. Remember, just like when you drive a car off a lot, gadgets lose their value over time, so go do it now. Gazelle.com. And get your risk-free quote today. Do it now. The sooner you do, the more money your gadgets will be worth, and it'll be able to afford more stuff, more of that new cool stuff. Gazelle.com, we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. There's gold in that there mountain lion.
That's right. Actually, it's a golden master.
Lion has gold gone master. Gold.
Yeah,
Ryan
right.
Block asked on Gadget yesterday, has any OS X operating system ever gone gold and then not come out exactly the same way as the gold master?
Yeah, and somebody, it was a iOS version.
Not an OS X, but an iOS
version. Yeah, an iOS version did. Yeah. I can't remember. I think it was Jason Snell or somebody who responded to him. But yeah, so gold master means basically it's ready to ship, barring any last minute tweaks.
Goldfinger.
Little bugs. Yeah, we can just keep going.
Sure.
Golden arm.
Stop. Retriever.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this operating system, it's golden now?
Yeah, it's going to be $20 in the App Store. So it could come out, I guess, as early as next week, maybe a couple of weeks. If you purchased a Mac on June 11th or after, you'll get the Mountain Lion upgrade for free. This is stuff that we already knew. But 512pixels.net is reporting the Mountain Lion's going to do something a little bit differently than Lion did. They're going to check your system before you download the operating system to make sure your system can actually run the
OS.
That's
polite.
It is polite, and it's also extremely helpful.
Very.
We might recall that there were some folks who were able to download Lion and then not actually able to run it, and it can be very confusing for somebody who just wants the operating system that everybody else is talking about. The specs are not too crazy. You need OS 10, 10.6.8 or later, 2 gigs of memory, 8 gigs of hard drive space. Again, not crazy requirements, but I do have a MacBook Pro that would not be running Mountain Lion. It doesn't support certain older MacBook Pros, certain iMacs. So if your system can't support it, apparently there won't be a download, which, of course, it'll be frustrating, but at least it'll save you the download. As far as what to expect, I was telling Tom yesterday that I had a really great experience with the dev version of Mountain Lion over the weekend when I wanted to watch the Wimbledon tennis final on my big TV. And it's like, okay, well, I don't have cable and it's on ESPN. Crap. What do I do? Well, I could open up ESPN3 on my laptop. That's fine. It's
then
doable.
Then you have to crowd around your laptop.
But
you'd rather have it on the big TV.
I can't AirPlay it from my iPad because it's running Flash. It's a Flash window on ESPN3, so that doesn't work. What do I do? Yes, Mountain Lion.
Mountain Lion has AirPlay.
Yeah, and one of the Brilliant. Computers in my home can AirPlay to the big TV. Problem solved. That was one of those moments where I'm like, okay, this is great. At least for cord cutters, it's like, it just, those little things matter. So that's something I'm really looking forward to. I know, Peter, before the show, you mentioned that you've played around with Mountain Lion a bit, and Messages, the app that sucks so badly, is also better.
Yeah, it does work a little bit better. I've been playing AirPlay to send Portal 2 to my TV, which is good fun. Ooh. But the thing that really surprised me, I've been using Mountain Lion since the second version of the beta, and this new version that came out today, my machine now boots up in 12 seconds, and this is a 2011 MacBook Pro. It does have an SSD in there, but it's incredibly fast. So I think a lot of people will be surprised by that when they play around with Mountain Lion. It's good fun.
Well, speaking of AirPlay, there's actually a new piece of software. It's not that new, but Ars Technica has a feature about it that would let anyone do what Sarah was talking about.
Yeah, so Ars Technica had a piece spotlighting Miracast. I'm not mispronouncing Miracast. It's Miracast, M-I-R-A, cast.
Now, Miracats.
This actually was introduced on, I believe, May 31st of this year, and it's piggybacking off of Wi-Fi Direct. And what it lets you do is you take one device, and then you can actually talk to another device, and you want to stream video between devices. No network necessary other than this ad hoc thing you've created. So it's kind of like AirPlay, but AirPlay needs a network. It's kind of like DLNA, which also requires a network. But like DLNA, it's supposed to be a standard that allows this utopia where I can have any device talk to another device without having to even worry about internet connections or a network or your home network or any of that stuff.
That's magic.
That's magic. And the question is, though, is anybody going to go on board with this? Because Sony has their own iteration of Wi-Fi Direct. Samsung has their own. Miracast should be coming out this year, backed by the Wi-Fi Alliance, who's also backing a competing standard called 802.11ad. Which is a short-range, high-throughput networking, so you can have really good video transfer that would be pretty solid. Again, no routers for that one either. Has the market gotten too fragmented or too complex such that we could not have any device talk to another device? Because I know when you're trying to hook up,
And it's not a hardware requirement, is it? Or is it something where I could take a Wi-Fi-enabled television, do a firmware upgrade, and it would work?
I believe it's firmware-based. It's because they all have Wi-Fi, and that's become a standard component of so many different devices. And it's in that variation that you can make this work, I think. I've got to double-check that. But what do you think, Peter? Do you think it's possible in this day and age that we would have... we don't have to worry about it. Do you have AirPlay? Do you have DLNA? Do we have this? Could you be hooking up your Samsung to your Sony?
I don't think it's possible in terms of the companies working together, but God, it would be so fantastic if it would, because I do a lot of training, and for that, whenever I go to a place with an iPad or a MacBook, like, I would love them to have an Apple TV so I could do the AirPlay directly to their screen or projector. Of course, no one does, because who owns an Apple TV in a corporate setting? So, for this to work, it would be so good. It would really be fantastic, but unfortunately, I don't think we live in that world.
I want to live in that world.
Me too.
So what do we do?
All do.
What do we do to get to that world? I mean, that is a problem with the system of innovation we have right now. Is we have a standards industry that says, here's the standards. It's golden. All you got to do is take the software. It's patent, we've inured it, and you can put it on your device, and you can put it on your television, and then everyone can use it. And we're worried that no one will use it. It's like a gift. Why wouldn't companies use this?
Well, Apple would like to sell Apple TVs, mm-hmm. for example. They don't necessarily want you to AirPlay something from your iPad to your Samsung television without using something that Apple sold you first. I mean, we're not a big cooperative here in the world, all working together to make something as convenient for all of us as possible. We're answering to corporations.
One of the big issues with televisions in general is the fact that they're almost commodities. And so if you're going to have something stand out, you're going to rebrand one of these standards. DLNA being called DLNA is a terrible name.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, it's very hard to explain. What does it do? How does it work? Mm-hmm. It's actually quite simple if you sit and read it, but you have to sit and read it. Can you have an advertisement that can get something across? Like in the Apple ads, they're like, look, I'm just flicking it to my TV. Oh, that's something interesting. Samsung did the same thing. They used DLNA, but they called it something else, I think. But like, it's because I think it's the education aspect that it's very difficult for these standards to be marketed as the standard because they are being called X by one company and Y by another. And you have no idea that your Samsung TV can talk to your Sony PS3 via DLNA. So that alphabet soup confuses people.
I may be off the reservation here, but theoretically, I could make an app for the Samsung Smart TV platform and for the LG platform that takes advantage of Miracast. So I could solve that without having to have the television providers really on board. And then I could theoretically, now I don't know if that actually would work because it might be a firmware upgrade to the television itself, but okay, let's say maybe I can make that happen. Then I can go and I can write programs for my laptop for Windows, for Linux, for OS X that could take advantage of that as well and use Wi-Fi to send it out. Theoretically, that's possible. What I can't do is write an iOS app that does the same thing. Even if I could technically write it, Apple would kick it out for replicating functionality that Apple already has. And it wouldn't be able to take everything off of off the iPad and sling it anyway. It's the problem of the locked-in mobile platform.
Yeah, it would still not be as convenient as AirPlay because, yeah, you could only do it within that app. You'd have to remember to move everything to that app.
And that's why I still have a computer hooked up to my television that I screen share into so I can go ahead and control it because it just doesn't really work.
Finally, Verizon filed a brief with the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit with complaints against the FCC's open internet order. That happened last week. But MediaMatters.org has an analysis up today saying that they found some very interesting language in that complaint. The open internet order, if you're not familiar, says that Verizon, as a provider of broadband internet, we're not talking about Verizon Wireless here. We're talking about Fios as well as DSL. Verizon can't block or slow access to legal online content because they disagree with its message or are being paid by an outside party to do so. That's the much maligned net neutrality provision that the FCC has put into place. Media Matters points out this interesting phrase in Verizon's filing from last week. In performing these functions, that's the functions of transmitting information over their networks, broadband providers possess editorial discretion. Just as a newspaper is entitled to decide which content to publish and where broadband providers may feature same content over others. They're trying to claim a precedent with the Turner Broadcasting case that says, hey, we're a content provider, and so we have free speech. You can't tell us what speech we can transmit over our network and what we can't. Seems to make sense. However, Verizon and every other ISP here in the United States also benefit from a safe harbor provision that says, under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, that they are not held responsible if infringing material passes through their network. That's also true of criminal material of any kind. They're not responsible for it because...
But certainly not true of a newspaper organization.
They're a neutral conduit. Exactly. So they're trying to say, when it's convenient for us, we'd like to be treated as a news organization and have editorial control. But when it's not convenient, when we're going to get sued for, you know, a pedophile using our internet access without our knowledge, we want safe harbor. We don't want to be held responsible for that.
I'm trying to think, is that black and white where can they not, because this is the internet we're talking about. This is not some like, okay, this isn't a newspaper and this isn't a dumb pipe. It's a managed network. So there's a bit of, I mean, are these analogies apt? So I'm not really sure. I mean, I think this argument has issues, but I'm not really sure if crafting, this is going to sound silly, crafting specific rules for new technology, maybe that needs to be done instead of going, is it like that or like that? No, it's a new thing entirely.
That's been the problem for decades now. You're absolutely right. Peter, as an outside observer, I mean, you guys have a state-run broadband internet in Australia now, so you've got a different way of doing things, but do you think that this sounds like craziness over here?
That just sounds like one of those sentences that just sounds so benign, but then once you read it a couple of times, a chill just goes down your spine. Just to correct you, we don't actually have state-run or, you know,
state broadband
here.
Would you say? How would you say it?
It's kind of the NBN is the broadband initiative. It hasn't fully rolled out to the country yet, but basically they're just providing the backbone, and then there will still be competition to use those pipes.
Are there net neutrality provisions on that, or there not need to be since it's?
You'd have to ask someone else. I'm not that.
my belief is that if we have enough competition, these sort of things don't matter, right? Because if Verizon decides to edit my content, I just go to somebody else who doesn't edit my content, and enough competitors in the marketplace will allow me to have the choices. The problem in the United States is we don't have enough competitors in the marketplace to go choose somebody else. And I think Verizon, the courts have tested the DMCA safe harbor provisions, and they've said, yeah, you are immune from prosecution. I don't know that Verizon can win on this because the courts are going to say, no, we found in the past that you are a neutral conduit. If that happens, does that mean that net neutrality prevails? Do they lose their ability to oppose the open internet? order?
I'm not sure. I mean, that means just, I guess it depends on whether the legislature is going to react to that or not. I mean, things can have a screwed up result for now, but can be corrected later.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure where they're going with this.
It's an interesting defense that I think could lose them something big. I don't think the courts can give them this and leave the safe harbor provision. But crazier things have happened. Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Here's a crazier thing that happened. Cloned horses have been given approval to compete in the Olympics.
Of course.
Who didn't see that coming?
I mean, that's really basic, I think. Because there was an international governing body for equestrian sports. And there was a ban previously that said you couldn't have cloned animals in these races.
Uh-huh.
But that's overturned. So I guess in the future, if we won the Olympics, we could have like 12 secretariats going at it in a race.
And it would just all be up to the jockey. They'd all be on an equal playing ground.
What do you think? Should we have commoditized horses?
Well, I guess I still think back to that. What was it? Polly the sheep. And it was all very exciting.
Dolly.
And then there's Dolly. Yeah. And then there was something wrong with her.
You're thinking of Polly Shore.
Also cloned, clearly. cloned horses. I don't know. I'm torn on this whole thing. Are they somehow better? The whole idea of physically participating and competing against someone else, it's that weird gray area where it's like, what if somebody has, you know, a bionic leg? It's awesome. They can run again, but maybe now they have an advantage because his leg is better than the human leg would have been originally.
I think it's a South African runner whose implants, he doesn't have from the knees down, his mm-hmm. legs have been amputated, and his implants have been approved for competing in the regular Olympics, not the Paralympics,
right.
in the Olympics. So that is happening too. It's kind of an amazing world.
Cloned people. It's only a matter of time.
So the cloned horses have been used for mostly breeding right now, not competing. So none of them are coming into the 2012 Olympics. So the thing is, Peter, should they also clone the jockeys so there's exactly the same? We have the cloned jockeys on cloned horses. We'll have the most boring races ever. Everyone just crosses at the same time.
I think Willy Wonka already tried that, and it turned out kind of weird. But I don't know. That's where I want to see it. I want to see the cloned humans, and then I'll get excited.
Oh, and Garst corrected me in the chat room. He was born without legs. It was not an amputation. My mistake. And he's got implants. That are allowed to be used in the Olympics, talking about the runner. So thanks for that correction. But I do think that you bring up a good point, Ayaz. If we have clone jockeys on cloned horses, we are going to have a good test of nature versus nurture.
Mm-hmm. We're really big podiums.
Yeah. Let's let's get off this horse and look at the calendar.
It's dead, yeah.
Today, the 10th of July, I've got some very exciting news for the people of Australia because you're getting Pandora Radio. Thanks to Nick for sending us an email about this. It's pretty awesome. Google is axing Meebo apps starting tomorrow. We had talked about that a few weeks ago. Tomorrow, the 11th, no more Meebo apps because Google does a lot of the stuff that is very similar internally already. RIM and Verizon are launching BlackBerry Curve 9310, the 9310, on July 12th for $50. Who's excited?
Me.
Really?
No.
Okay. The new iPad is coming to mainland China on July 20th, and they're really going to try to keep the stampedes to a minimum. They're going to open reservations for pickup starting the day before on the 19th, but they're limiting the reservation window to 3 hours between 9 a.m. and noon.
Communist.
Everybody be nice to each other out there. And finally, the AT&T Atrix HD is priced at $99. It's coming July 15th. That was leaked last week, but it has become official today.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
First email comes from Jason Marlin, the guy, or it comes from Marlin. He says, hey, TNT crew, what's up, Jason? That's what...
Hey, Marlon, guy from Trinidad.
He was speaking... He's in the chat room. Marlon, the guy from Trinidad here, and yesterday you had a great discussion on patents, which I appreciated as a consumer. I am interested in understanding this mess. However, in referring to the Samsung case in the UK, you boiled it down to the judge saying the Galaxy Tab was not as cool, rather than engage in the discussion of prior art, as the judge also said they, quote, found numerous Apple design features to lack originality and numerous identical design features to have been visible in a wide range of earlier tablet designs from before 2004. Marlon, thanks for pointing that part of it out. He says, I was surprised that you didn't point this out, as it usually one of the instances of patents to move past the quick sound bites and call out something. I just didn't see that. So thanks for pointing it out. Appreciate that.
I believe I was blinded by the headlines because every one of them picked the beak. It was not as cool. And they don't... A lot of these sites don't necessarily go into the depth that you did, Marlon, and I just probably glazed over. Because another patent discussion for me,
And frankly, him saying that numerous Apple design features lack originality isn't unusual. That's typical in patent cases. Actually saying your design isn't as cool as that one was headline grabbing because it's different. It's something you don't normally see.
Yes, they thought different, so we liked it.
Next email from Steve in Chicago. Hey, TNT crew. On yesterday's show, while talking about the Nexus 7 and Amazon Kindle Fire, the good old argument of which had better specs was brought up. It wasn't the only point brought up, but an emphasized one. While a valid way to compare devices, it's not everything. In today's day and age, software can be as helpful as hardware in making a device perform better. Jelly Bean with Project Butter UI proves that an older device like the Galaxy Nexus can get a nice speed boost without the aid of newer hardware. So even if the next Fire only has a dual core, it seems that properly tuned software will make it so that I don't wish for two extra cores. Then there's the overall consumer experience to consider, be it dual core, quad core, depending on the RAM. For me, it all comes down to who's going to make the support better for me as a customer when all this great technology stops working. I've talked to Amazon customer service before, but Google, do they even have a support number? Yeah, I think Steve has a good point, something that we've talked about in the past. Dual core versus quad core. Quad core just sounds better. And for some people, quad core does matter. For all people, it definitely doesn't. And we've also talked about the Amazon ecosystem and the fact that that just really appeals to people. When I was traveling the last 3 weeks, besides iPads, everybody's got a Kindle. Not a Kindle Fire, but certainly a Kindle if people love Amazon. So I do agree that specs aren't everything.
I was just going to say, Steve, I think you can bring up a point that specs aren't everything, but specs are important. I mean, my 2-year-old phone does not operate nearly as well as it used to because of newer operating system, newer apps that push it farther and farther.
Well, I think when you've got $200 tablets, it's like, well, what's the cooler one? It's the same amount of money.
The same price. I'm buying the one with a little more feature-proof.
Even if you don't understand what quad-core is, you might say, well, that's better, right? I'm going to go with that.
Like the Xbox 360 and the PS3. We'll just name it something.
Well, it's not even just the naming. It's saying, hey, you know what? Maybe the operating system doesn't take best advantage of quad-core now, but when there's an operating system update in the future that takes advantage of it, I want to have a quad-core so that I can.
Our last email from Sharon. Good morning. I'm listening to Monday's show when Tom asked for people to email if you had been affected by the DNS changer virus. I'm invoicing a client for repairing his home network, which was infected by this virus. A client contacted me yesterday after they were unable to access the internet from their home office. Sure enough, the DNS settings on the unsecured Linksys router had been changed to the DNS changer's IPs. We are not sure if his Mac had been infected since it showed no indications of the virus, or if another system had been on his network, he was using WEP, and affected the router. Honestly, I was really surprised to have encountered this issue at all.
So it affected his router, which is one of the nasty things that this did. Peter, did you run into any DNS changer effects over there?
No. We had the the big campaign about it, but I didn't see anyone complaining. But then again, I guess I wouldn't see them. It's not like they'd be able to tweet about it if they were taken offline. But
phone or something they could use. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh yeah, one of those, I guess.
All right, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for submitting stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. We look at that every day. It's one of the many sources we look at to find out what we should include. We didn't talk about the DirecTV Viacom squabble, even though it's at the top there. But essentially, if you want to know, Viacom says it's just going to pull all of its channels off of DirecTV. It's another one of those fights like Dish was having with AMC, or still having with AMC, over carriage rates. So if you're a DirecTV subscriber, that's definitely going to affect you. Go to our subreddit. You'll find that and all kinds of other stories that you can look at, get informed about, and decide if you want us to discuss them more on the show. Vote them up or down, technewstoday.reddit.com. We thank everybody in there, including the moderators, for their support. Thank you, Peter Wells, for joining us and staying up way, way late. Really appreciate it. Let folks know about what you're doing over there in Australia.
I've just taken over the editing duties for MacTalk.com.au. So it looks pretty kind of wonky at the moment, but it's a great community. So hopefully we'll get it back on its feet and get it looking a little bit pretty again.
Yeah, shine it up. That's great. Congratulations on the new gig.
Cheers. Thanks.
And thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv. Give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Don't forget, we're live every day at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here at live.twit.tv if you want to catch us that way as well. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. Lloyd Case joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.
This isn't a Rotten Tomato, that was by a, the way. That was it's a very subtle, fresh, happy
That was a subtle reminder to change your firmware to tomato?
Yes.